Finally, a psychotherapist that focuses on helping people strive for self-awareness and thrive for self-satisfaction with their place in the world. It's a show for real people with real lives, with all the drama, trauma, and chaos that life can throw at you. Here she is, Dr. Bev.
Welcome to America Out Loud, Emotions Are Us, with your host, Dr. Bev. I'm a licensed, nationally certified psychotherapist to real people with regular lives, doing regular things and experiencing real-time drama, trauma, and chaos in their life. I'm a certified Gestalt psychotherapist, which means I'm a reality psychotherapist. I'm real, I'm raw, and I'm authentic. Welcome to today's show. I'm so excited. Our topic for today, computers, internet, and society. What do you mean? Dr. Bev, what are we really going to talk about? Well, I'm going to give you a quote from one of my most fabulous person in the world here in this field. Why am I optimistic about mankind's future? If you were to graph mankind's improvement in any endeavor, medicine, science, biology, mathematics, logic, etc., it's an exponential curve. Looks like a hockey stick. Simple explanation of what that means and an example of decoding the human genome explains its significance. Wow, that's pretty powerful right there. The exponential function, most people use the intuitive linear view of history instead of the historical exponential view. That's Dave Doc Dockery. That's my guest today, okay? He is president of the Tampa Bay Computer Society, where they repair their members' computers for free. Welcome to the show, Doc.
Oh, thank you, Beverly. Good morning. Good to see you again, or hear you again, I guess.
It's good to hear you again and let my listening audience just find out about what... I want to know what the Computer Society is about, but I first want my audience to know Doc. You know, I feel like I'm in a session. I want to get to know my client before I look at their paperwork. So let our audience get to know you. How and what made you even think about a Computer Society?
I moved to St. Louis years ago, and I bought my first real computer. And I bought it used. It was an Osborne. And I guarantee you have Osborne users out there. They go, oh, yeah, I love my Osborne. I love that computer. But I didn't know anything, you know. And I tried to make it run. And this was long before Windows. There was no such thing as Windows, where you, in those days you actually had to know what the commands were. And I just didn't know anything. So in the middle of a snowy night, I drove. There was a snowstorm. And I drove all across town in St. Louis to go to a meeting that I read about at a local high school. And I walked in, and there were 300 people there, and they had a computer group, and they welcomed me with open arms. And I said, you know, I bought this new computer, and I'm totally lost. And they said, oh, no, we're going to help you. And they said, we're going to sell you these discs for $10, which will change your life. And they did, and they introduced me to this world, and they brought me into it, you know. And so I developed an affinity for computer user groups because I realized how important they were and what a difference they had made in my life. So when I came to Tampa, I located one that had just started up, and it was the Tampa Bay Computer Society. And I ended up, I joined it. But then I couldn't go to meetings for years because I was working night shift and over in Tampa, so I couldn't go to the meeting. But I always kept my membership up because in the belief that that's an economic vote, that these guys are important, that they should survive. And a few years down the road, and the next thing I knew, I became pretty much lifetime president. I've been president now for... oh, it's going on 17 years. I've had a couple of short breaks, but for a long time. And but it's because I think of the passion that I feel for what we do. We take seniors in our world and we help them to bridge the digital divide. We help make their lives by giving them this technology. And my mom was one of those people. My mom died a couple of years ago, but I taught her a computer. I bought her a computer several years ago, and I taught it to her. And had I not done that, she would have been isolated the last 10 years of her life. But the fact that she had a computer, it meant she could look things up. It meant that she did email and stayed connected to her friends from across the years. And it absolutely makes a difference in their life. So I'm telling you, to me, it's an important part of our world to keep our seniors wired in. They help do everything we can to keep them abreast of the current technology.
That just brings up so many emotions in my head. I mean, I think of people who are in hospitals, who are going through things with cancer or just whatever, or they're isolated in a nursing home or a rehab. This is and would be their way of connecting if they only knew their way around the computer. I mean, there's Skype, there's FaceTime, there's everything that we can see and talk to each other. We don't have to be isolated anymore. Our world is global.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm about to turn 68 next month. So I'm part of the last generation that will not have been raised with all of the technology that we see around us. And so, you know, our children and grandchildren are going to be so much better at being able to adopt and adapt to this technology. So we're really the last. We're the troublesome. I teach a seminar every Monday afternoon at the Palm Harbor Library, and I see adults in there that are most of them are 60 plus years old, and they're just trying to make sense of all this technology and what they can do with it. They really, really are being dragged kicking and screaming into this world. But if they don't learn it, it just isolates them. So that's why I consider it so important.
Well, you know, another population that we've talked about before is the disabled. This disabled population and what the computer and internet brings to them. And I know that you have quite a few projects there at the Computer Society, but tell me about how you help developmentally disabled people.
We did the neatest thing recently.
What was that?
Number one, I got to tell you, since I'm president, I'm a big fan of the phrase "practice random acts of kindness."
Oh, wonderful!
Every year we do at least one, generally two. We do a random act of kindness free computer clinic, and we invite people in our community to bring their computers in, and we'll fix them for free that day. That's our volunteers do that. And so recently, we had a local church that learned about our propensity for kindness, and they had almost a dozen laptops, and they invite people from a park, the local, basically people that are developmentally disabled, and they invite them over, and they feed them one night, and they give them access to the computers. And these people rarely have any access to a computer, and they love it. So the problem was they were running Windows XP, and they could it's no longer supported, and so they had problems. So we took a full day, and on that day we reserved for fixing all their computers. We cleaned them up, and we put a new operating system on there. We put a Linux on there, with some utilities, so that they could draw and write and do some stuff. And I got to tell you, it was such a thrill to go there a couple weeks later and watch what they had learned already all on their own, because they basically just take them and they play. And they and we hooked them all up to a printer for them so they could now draw their drawings and then run it out on the printer and all of that. So that was one of the things that was really kind of very cool. We were very proud of doing that little thing. But we do free computer repair for all of our members.
I know.
Absolutely. So for $50 for a yearly membership, that entitles you to one totally free computer repair. But even then, after you've used that up, it's still only $20 for any computer repair. So very nominal. And we also have offices in Clearwater, so we do over 50 tech classes each month. You can learn about iPads and iPhones and smartphones of all sorts and tablets and all of that kind of thing. That's almost all. 98% of that stuff is free to our members. The only thing we're currently charging for is we're charging for Windows 10 classes and for 8 hours of instruction, and that's hands-on instruction, it's $40.
Wow.
Anybody that's bought any training, you can't beat that price.
No, you cannot beat that price. But I'm listening to you and just thinking about how many lives you touch and change. And it's just phenomenal in this world that there are many of us like you who practice random act of kindness, and just how it just explodes out to where other people want to help you, and it's a win-win to help others make a win-win. I mean, I just think, as you said, cool. That's super cool.
Absolutely. I was down at the club on Wednesday morning, and I was talking with one of the guys that he's there faithfully 2 days a week repairing computers. And I asked him, I said, have we had complaints recently? And he goes, well, I don't get any complaints. And I said, well, what is it you do? He says, as soon as they start complaining to me, I look at them and I say, you need to understand that everybody here that you see is volunteering their time, you know.
So check your personality at the door, your ego.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's been very successful for us. As of a couple of years ago, we were over 1,300 members. So that's, for a computer club, we're one of the largest in the world.
Computer
clubs overall are going away. And that's because, in my opinion, my board came to me first and they said, well, why? What are we doing wrong? And they said, we're not doing anything wrong, but you have to understand that technology is changing. And so our kids and our grandchildren, they have a problem. They know to go to YouTube and type in a question, and YouTube tells them how to fix it. And my God, mankind's never had that kind of access to good information. So I tell people, and I teach a lot of seminars in computers, and I tell people up front, I said, if you don't wait any longer for the expert to come in from out of town to solve your problem. Go out to YouTube and type in your question as you have it, and there are people that have made a video which will show you how to fix your problem, and you can do it within 10 minutes. How cool is that? What does that mean for future generations of mankind as we move forward, that they can so quickly get access to those kinds of answers?
Well, it's fabulous to me. I see children come into my office and they're like barely 2 years old, and they have, little mini laptops with games on it or learning things, and they're just fascinated. And it's just wonderful. I think that I remember maybe this is a quote of yours in that we our IQ grows about 3% per decade.
That That's right. That's called the Flynn effect. And I know it will surprise people because here's the standard thing I hear from adults. I hear, well, the kids coming up behind us, they just don't get it. They don't know how hard it was. They're never going to be able to do what we did. And I would venture to say that's been the attitude, the overwhelming attitude of every generation regarding the previous generation. But you know what? We're still here, aren't we?
We are. We're still here.
And I think what actually happens is that what happens is they learn new skills because the world changes, and they have to go back and learn. They have to learn new skills, and the old skills fall away. Yeah, you know, I can't go out. I would not know how to go out and kill a fish or a chicken and prepare it. You know, I'm dependent upon getting those little square fish you get at McDonald's, you know. If I know, you know. But I can't do that. But there's things that we can do that previous generations just couldn't. Well, sometime around 1930, when they were started checking IQs and grading us on how intelligent we were, somewhere in there, a guy named Flynn said, "Hey," he goes, "it's we're increasing 3 IQ points each decade," and that's called the Flynn effect. So overall, we are getting smarter. I think, by the way, that 3 IQ points is going to jump. I think what we should be looking at is something like 3 to 5 points more than that in the future, because of the way that we handle information and because our schools are getting better and in a variety of ways. And I know there's people that will disagree with that, but overall, talk to some people that have kids in Common Core, and you'll find out it's not nearly what you've heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's one of the cool things.
That is such a cool thing. I know in many of the urban schools here in St. Petersburg, Florida, the children are given laptops, small mini tablets, to do their homework, communicate with the teacher, do all sorts of things from their laptop, and they're using them in class. Like, wow.
Absolutely. There's a wonderful resource called Khan Academy that I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard of. This is Khan as in Genghis Khan, K-H-A-N, Academy. A guy named Salman Khan years ago started doing 10-minute math lessons for, I think they were his cousins, and he started putting them up on the internet somewhere. Today, there's a whole site, it's just so remarkable. He's done, I'm pretty sure it's well over 2,000 10-minute speeches on everything, mathematics and English and algebra and trigonometry. It just goes on and on. And number one, he had to learn it in each case, and then number two, he had to make it readily accessible via computer in each case, and he did that. And so we could actually turn our whole educational system over and educate them on Khan Academy for free. That's all free. You can go out there and use it. Well, we're not going to do that anytime soon, but I'm telling you, it really changes the way that we can make education accessible to our people. There are wonderful courses.
Oh, we're going to make sure that we add that for our viewers so that they can readily look that up and go there and check it out. That's something that I didn't know, and it's a fabulous resource. I know that the children who come into my office, oftentimes they want to get on Cool Math. I have them on puzzles, another free website called Jigzone, and just to watch how their mind works. And in therapy, I can learn so much about them. And these kids are so on it, even the teenagers. I mean, they can be on the computer and doing their thing, to them it's a game, you know. They don't even realize that they're learning. And we can talk and have therapy, and their brains are so adept that they can do both at the same time. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Absolutely. Big changes educationally, I do believe. And that is something, let me talk about another love of mine, because one of the things that's happening across the United States, I'm sure it's across the world, is a thing called maker spaces or slash hacker spaces. And there actually are some other terms for them too. But I've created one called Clearwater Maker Spaces in Clearwater, Florida. And the topics that we're looking at are astronomy, virtual reality, 3D printing, drones, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, and the Internet of, what's called the Internet of Things. And that's a new term for a lot of people, but that's changing. It's already changing. The Internet of Things is because we're going to give everything, every electronic device, that an Internet address. And then you'll be able to reach that device across the Internet and interact with it. Well, one example, one that's being done now is the one where you can buy an intelligent thermostat, and you can go online and, did you forget to turn and cut your thermostat back when you left for work? That's okay, you can do that later. Did you forget to lock the door? You can lock your doors later.
Wow.
Kind of thing. I've already seen, as 5 or 6 years ago, and people have assured me they're still there, but I haven't seen it since then. But I was up and saw the Sears had the internet connected refrigerator. And
okay.
You would not, and I try to, I'm trying to explain this trend to my audiences. I go, you know, you wouldn't go out and pay even $50 if they said, well, we'll give you this refrigerator, but it'll be connected to the internet. And most people would say, I don't care. I'm not going to spend $50 to connect it. But it will become ubiquitous at some point. It just will be there. Well, how would that make a difference? Well, you go buy some steaks. You take the steaks home. You throw them in the refrigerator. The refrigerator, they'll have an RFID encoding chip in them, so that'll just be part of the packaging. The refrigerator will look at that chip. It will tell it what was just put in there and when its expiration date is and how much, whatever information about that. Okay, so you're at work, and it's 3 weeks later, and you get an email or a text message from your refrigerator. You know? And your refrigerator says, "Hey, you've got these steaks that you bought, and they're about to go bad. You only got another 2 days, and they're going to expire." Well, I got to thinking that tonight is your poker night, and your buddies are all coming over to play poker. So I just went ahead and ordered you a case of beer. So please pick it up on your way home and have a party. And I'm already defrosting the steaks, you know, and bingo. Well, that's the kind of thing that will happen. And it just will happen because it just as the technology gets smarter, it will do those kinds of things, you know. So,
wow, that's just like incredible. But yet, I believe whatever you say that's going to happen in the internet world, you know, you're like my guru. I believe it. The first time I was driving down the expressway and I was going to a Tampa meeting, as a matter of fact, and some guy had shot and killed a police officer. And every billboard that was those turnable kind, the electric kind, the internet kind, I don't know what they're called, but every one of them, every few seconds, it was popping up. This guy's face, big as daylights, what he'd done. I'm like, this man doesn't know it, but buddy, you're about to be caught. And sure enough, he was. He was definitely caught.
Yeah, absolutely. When they first started putting those up, I wasn't sure what exactly they were going to be doing with them. And it so happens one of our members was one of the first people to hack that sign, and she connected to those signs and wrote a paper about it. So giving how people could connect to those signs and, at that time, I'm sure they've shut that path down now. But anyhow, we can pass along real-time information like that. You know, a lot of us drive the GPS. I love my GPS.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but my GPS doesn't make good estimates of how long it's going to take me to get someplace because that's all pre-programmed. I don't have traffic. I didn't pay extra to get traffic. If I did that, it would also check in and see how he was doing traffic-wise. However, there is a free app that I will tell you about. It runs on your Android phones or on your, it runs on your smartphones. And it was created by Google, or it was bought by Google. It was created by somebody else. Google bought it and uses it. It's called Waze, W-A-Z-E. That's W-A-Z-E. It's free. And when you download it, it works like a GPS and a map program, and it understands your voice. So you can be traveling, and you can call up Waze, and you can say, I need instructions on how to get to the Tampa Stadium. And Waze figures out, and then it gives you step-by-step directions on how you get there. But here's the important difference, okay? It is crowdsourcing. So in other words, it knows where you are, and it knows who's around you. So it envisions that it sees that there are 50 people within, 5 miles of you. And it's taking information from them that it will apply to you. So it's already saved me from 3 tickets because I'm traveling into Tampa and I'm just cruising along. And all of a sudden I get Waze tells me, speed trap 2 miles ahead. So I slow down and there I go. As I get up there, there's the police sitting off the side of the road. So, I had that warning. And, or it tells me things. It's also done this. It says, if you go this particular way, your traffic is only going 6 miles an hour because there was an accident there. So now it'll give me an alternative route so I can get around that. And so you can't, and it's free. By the way, it does such a good job that in Florida, the NTSB, our National Transportation Group, they've added in their information is being fed into Waze also. So you get not only other Wazers, which is the name if you were running, you're a Wazer, and not only do you get information from other Wazers, but you also get information from the official people,
That is incredible. And you started with, this is cloud sourcing, is that?
That's called crowdsourcing. That's when we use our connectivity to other people to solve problems, to pass on information. Generally speaking, we'll solve some kind of problem. One of the most famous, let me give you an example, one that I just love. Scientists have spent 15 years trying to do a thing called protein folding. And it's important for the scientists that were doing this are people that are working with HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to do protein folding because I'm not going to get technical about it, but it's something important that they needed to solve. And they couldn't solve it. And they used a supercomputer and they used all of their, the best thinking. And what happened one day is somebody who hangs out on a gaming website, he heard about what they were trying to do. So he went out and educated himself about it, which he could do via the internet pretty fast. And then he went back to his gaming site and he goes, hey, he said, scientists are trying to solve this program, this problem called protein folding. And he goes, so I created a little game called Fold It, and I put it up on the web, and it's free to use. and it will teach you the basics of protein folding. And then, you know, we solve problems like this. We're people that apply our logic and learning to solving problems. And he said, so let's see if we can help them and figure this out. Now, this problem had resisted, I believe it's for 15 years. If they went on, and by collaborating on this website and using his game to lead the way and help them teach it, they solved the problem in 17 days.
Whoa.
7 days. So that little bit of serendipity awaits us hundreds and dozens, hundreds and thousands of times as we hurtle into the future. So that's the kind of thing that we'll see. And that's the collaboration or crowdsourcing that we're going to bring to bear on a lot of problems that we have.
Crowdsourcing. So now it makes sense to me, your Clearwater Makerspace meetups. You're talking about astronomy, virtual reality, 3D printing. I mean, whoa, you guys are taking it to 5 levels up. I mean, you talk about leveling up. This is like, whoa. What you can do with, I'm just looking at this. One of the topics is drones. I mean, really? Drones? When I think about that, I think about artificial intelligence, you know, the military, that kind of thing. Help me out here.
Yeah, I love it. I bought my first drone recently. I still haven't flown it. I just charged it the other day. And I realized when I read the instructions on how to fly it, I thought, oh my gosh, I actually need like 4 hands to get it going. I had one of my son's friends who's a drone enthusiast, and he told me, he says, you got to be prepared. He goes, you don't learn one of these without crashing it several times. So he's already warned that you're going to crash it. So I'm just trying to minimize the crashes. I'm going to a group. There's a drone makerspace, or actually I should say a drone meetup group, and we're gonna build our own drone in each of us, $48 for the equipment to build our own drone, and we'll do that probably next month. That's coming up.
And
now these are little ones, you know. I don't have a big one, and so that's okay. I wanted to learn on a cheap one. Because you can quickly, some of the people in this group, they have stuff, the equipment that's well over $1,000. Well, I'm not going to spend that much at this point. I want to play with it a little bit, you know. But, yeah, how to use them and how effective is this technology? I noticed on the news yesterday, I actually had to kind of chuckle because there's a sinkhole somewhere in Tampa, and they had footage. They were flying over the sinkhole. Instead of using a helicopter, it identifies the taker of that video as drone number 8. Okay, you know, I'm sure a helicopter, it costs you a bit to pilot somebody out there and gasoline and all that. Well, with the drone, they get every bit as good as a video, and there you go. You just put up a little thing, you know.
Isn't that incredible?
It absolutely is. So our delving into Clearwater Makerspaces is my attempt to let my membership know what's going on in these fields, and because it's so much to keep up with, but I also am looking at putting in a proposal to the local library, because the libraries are converting their space. All libraries now tend to have extra space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because there's less books. Instead of having books, you get e-books, and they take up far less room. So they're getting rid of their stacks and finally of stacks of books, and realizing that they have some space, and what can they do with that space? So the Palm Harbor Library which I live in Palm Harbor. They're putting it maker spaces in. They're going to have they're buying the equipment, and in their case, it'll be sewing. Okay, with makerspace, by the way, whatever you can think of, whatever activity you can think of, there's probably a makerspace for it somewhere. So they're going to do sewing. Well, mine tend to be technical in nature. So I'm looking at devices that we can buy that teach kids things about cool things to do with technology. Programming is big on our hit list. We're going to teach our kids how to program stuff. That's been a goal set out by President Obama. And the reason is programming teaches you logic. It teaches you how to be logical about what you're doing. And the programming languages that we have today are not difficult in comparison to what we had before. They're very simple and make it easy for you to apply a programming language to some sort of device and get it to do the things that you want it to do. You want it to play music, you want it to travel around the room, a whole variety of things like that. So that's all coming, all going to be a big deal.
You're giving me hope for education. Okay, it's one of my biggest things, but it's also one of my biggest passions, rather. But it's one of my sources of just irritation. When I look at what we could be doing in the schools, as you've just explained and given an example of, and where our kids would be, you know, no matter what economic level you're at, no matter where you are, there is a way for you to learn something that you can do that is really about you in the computer world, in this internet world, that can provide you with a source of income and move you out of whatever economic path you're on to move you to something greater. And what I see happening, especially with a lot of the young people, you know, they are all tattooed up and they're this and they're that, and I love just, yeah, I'm a voyeur, so I love talking to people and just, you know, what's going on. And I talk to these, you know, men, women, and they're all tattooed out, and what comes out of their mouths just floor me. I own my own business, so I don't have to dress up and wear a shirt and tie. Okay, this is what I do. I do this, 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 and this, and I do it out of my house, or I own this building over here. You're what? You're 23 and you own that building over there? Oh yeah, it was something that I, you know, a little game that I created, and it took off, and now it's on every kid's tablet, you know, all over the world. Whoa, that's a game changer.
Absolutely. You know, I do a lot of public speaking, and most of my stuff is training. It's for a long time, it's been Microsoft Office and Windows and Microsoft Office. And I've traveled the world doing that professionally, but that stuff is going away. And so today, I'm teaching tablets and smartphones. But one of my consistent speeches and the most requested speech I get is about my picture of the future, because you will hear the most optimistic version of the future from me that you will from darn near anywhere. And I tell people, you know, I say, I want you to understand, if you're watching the news, what you're hearing about every night on the national news is what barns are on fire. And there's all sorts of barns on fire. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of mean, nasty, ugly things happening across the world. And I keep up with it. I want to know what's going on in my world. But I'm here to tell you that there's all sorts of people out there working very hard to see that we don't come to those ends, because they find a way to fix those problems. And those speeches you'll see on TED.com. That's TED.com. Many people know about TED today, but for a long time, I was a voice in the wilderness trying to get them to go out there. On TED, you see a bunch of 18-minute speeches or less that talk about here's what we're going to do to fix this particular problem. You'll hear optimism that you just won't see on TV. The only thing they'll do on TV is the last 2 minutes of the broadcast. They'll tell you about one good thing that happened in the day. And let me go a little further with that. Talking about years ago, I made a prediction that because of the access to the internet and access to computers, kids were going to start doing things earlier in life, and they were going to be doing positive things much earlier in life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it was already happening. Okay, I hadn't seen it yet myself. It just made sense to me that it would happen. But let me give you just one simple explanation. A kid, he was 6 years old. He had a pen pal who said, you know, we spend 4 hours a day. His pen pal was in Africa. And his pen pal said, we spend 4 hours a day just getting water so that we can cook and wash. And he said, if we had the money for a well, we would build a well, but we didn't have to do that. And so the kid back here in the States, he went on a plan. He raised the money that they need to build that well. And now that would be a wonderful story if it ended there. But once he had that done, he knew how to do it. And so he, and with I'm sure from the help of many adults around him, he started Ryan's Well Foundation. And you can go out and look up Ryan's Well Foundation. I haven't been there for years, but I'm sure they're still out there going. The last time I had been there 5 or 6 years ago, he had built enough wells in the third world country that he affected over the lives of over 500,000 people.
Wow.
He is now, again, the last time I saw, he would now be 18 or 19, and he was in college the last I saw. But what a game-changing thing, started by a six-year-old. So that's happening all the time. Google, by the way, gives a $50,000 first prize every year to a kid who shows the most a technological achievement that can be done. So a few years ago, there was a 16-year-old girl that her iPhone ran out of battery power every day, and she wanted to use it more. So she went out and on the internet, and she learned more about batteries, and she created a fast way to charge so she can bring her iPhone back to a full charge within 30 seconds.
Get out of here.
And you're going to see that technology. It was immediately snapped up. And you should see that technology, hopefully, within the next couple of years.
All these technologies are created, and all these new things, and how children are learning at an earlier age, and how Google is giving away money, you know, for, you know, a youngster, a teenager, to come up with something that is a game changer, a world changer. Can we put that out, like, on billboards so that more children will know they can create something that will not only change them, their emotions, their families, because their emotional quotient is going to go up just by mere fact of having these mediums for us and around us. But as you have often said, there's a downside. And I'll change that to an and. You said you have the best what? World view. Coming on. Give it to me, Doc.
Okay. Well, number one, I'm not the one to be the best proselytizer for what kids can do. I think they're going to do that. I think they're going to learn that on their own, and they're going to do it. I would probably be a poor at it in comparison to, they'll do a much better job. I would like to spend, how much time do we have left, by the way?
We have all the time we want, Doc. For you, go for it.
Well, let me do this. I want to make sure that you read something that I wrote up at the beginning, that if I were to graph mankind's improvement in any endeavor, And that's medicine, science, biology, mathematics, logic. It's an exponential curve. It looks like a hockey stick. And I want to explain what that means because it's very important. It's going to become very important to us. And let me explain why that is so important. I used to, when I talk about the future, I used to carry a hockey stick with me. And I would hold it up in the air sideways where the curve of the business end of the stick would curve up towards the ceiling. So if you picture somebody holding that, and if you, along the bottom of that, you were to graph improvements in wherever. When I say the bottom, in other words, if you spent the first 200 years, you would show that mankind made almost no, increase in science, biology, any of those things. And little by little, somewhere around the 1900s, some of that stuff starts going up on that hockey stick. So what I'm saying is you're graphing this improvement in each one of those things. And but understand, here's what's important. When we get to the knee of the hockey stick, when we get to where that starts curving upwards, things begin to happen very fast. Mm-hmm. That's what I want you to understand. Because most of us view history in what we call the linear view of history. You look at how things were yesterday, and you use that to project how they'll be tomorrow. And what I want you to see is yesterday is going to bear less and less resemblance to what's coming tomorrow. We call this the historical exponential view. What happened now is we're at a point where all of our sciences are coming up the curve of that hockey stick, and they're all going to go right up towards the sky as they get increasingly faster and it's increasingly better organized and everything positive that you can think. And plus, they'll all be collaborative with each other, so you'll see that they'll feed on each other. So that's why I say what we're doing in the future is going to be so profoundly different than what got us here at this point. Let me give you one example. And that was back during the Reagan administration. A group of people got together and said, we're going to decode the human genome. And people said, the naysayers immediately said, you can't do that. You're talking millions of genes. And it cost millions of dollars just to do one gene. And you're talking about doing millions of them. That project is going to cost trillions of dollars. And it will take 200 or 300 years to do that. They said, so what's your, what are you going to do? How fast do you want to do it? They said, we're going to do it in 15 years. Well, the laughter was horrendous. You can't do that. So halfway through the project, they came to them again and they said, it's been 7.5 years. You're halfway. How much of the human genome have you decoded? And they said, we've got 1%. And they said, see, we told you you couldn't do it. And the people that were doing it said, no, you don't understand. We're right on spec. We're going to make it. Because what they understood that the others didn't was they understood that they were going to be able to double the amount of output that they had every year. And 7 doublings will bring you from 1% to 100%. So did it take them 15 years? No, took them 13.5 years. So they actually, because they got so much better at it near the end that they actually improved. So that's why I want you to see, it's important that you understand that regardless of how long it took in the past, it's going to collapse. That's going to happen much faster in the future. And yes, I do want to mention that I understand that technology, and you hear me talk glowingly about technology, and I tell my audiences at the beginning, I'm well aware that increases in technology often have a downside, but you know what? We adapt and we adjust, and that's what we do all the time. So with Facebook, I love that Facebook is available to people, but it also became a way to meet 14-year-old girls And for old men like me to meet a 14-year-old girl, and as a matter of fact, if I want to cop, I go on Facebook and I pretend to be a 14-year-old girl. That's the fastest way to find a cop, because they're tracking, hoping to bust people for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all very important towards what's happening in our future. I just can't stress that enough. When you add that in with the fact that our IQ will increase, that we're going to become more and more collaborative, that we're going to be crowdsourcing more than ever before, that another thing that's going to become important is reputation. Before, you could build, you could have a horrible reputation, and it didn't matter. You just left the town that you were in and moved to another town and started over, and now you did the same thing, screwing new groups of people with the same old thing that you've done before. However, that is going to be harder and harder to get away with. We force people, the internet and the collaboration that we use, force people that are used to doing business and doing the bad things that they do in the dark, out of sight where nobody knows what they're doing. And we're going to more and more, we're going to expose that. And when we do, it makes it very much harder for them to continue doing the negative things that they do.
Wow. Doc, in closing, tell me this. How can we improve our world?
That's a great question. I end my speeches with, what can each of us do? Well, number one, I'm going to make you aware of something. Wherever we go, when we talk to other people, we infect one another. And so I make that a point because I'm telling you, so often we are infecting people with negative thoughts, negative emotions, negative ideas. I say to you, watch what you spread. You will rarely hear me telling you about the downside of things. I try to insist that I talk to you about the upside, what it can be, the vision for the future. Insist on improving education. Education is absolutely our goal. The better educated we are, the better our lives get for everybody. So try and make sure that everybody sees that's a priority. Insist on transparency. This is a real big one in my book. Minimize the secrets. In order for us to improve our lives, we need good feedback. If people are out there compromising the feedback that you're getting, and I believe they are currently, I believe we get horribly negative feedback because of political agendas. So good feedback is necessary for us to get improvement. We insist on sharing of raw data, because if we get your raw data, that makes it easier to see where what changes we need to make. And that one's, a lot of people won't understand that, but I'll tell you, the guy that invented the internet, Tim Berners-Lee, he was tasked in England with going out and getting government and private business to share their raw data so that ensures us better feedback. And finally, I consider our club to be the heart of kindness in Pinellas County. I ask people to remember to practice kindness wherever you go.
Wow. Dave, Doc Dockery, thank you so much for being my guest today. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you, my dear. I appreciate the opportunity. I hope it gets some response.
To my listening audience, thank you for sharing space with Emotions Are Us, Dr. Bev, and my guest, Dave Doc Dockery. And for me, Dr. Bev, I'm here to save you time, pain, and emotional suffering. This is what this program is all about. It's what thinking outside of the circle, going out and looking at how our emotions affect us, all of us, in everything that we do. And if you're ready to do your work, counseling, you want coaching, or whatever you want to call it, contact me at drbev@americaoutloud.com.